This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanisan with Noel Lim and Lynn Mark in the studio this morning. Tomorrow marks 1 year since Lanka Sheraton and the fall of the Pakatan Harapan government. Under the Perikatan-led government, political instability remains as the country battles the COVID-19 pandemic while under a state of emergency. BFM will be having station-wide programming to discuss and analyze the implications of Lanka Sheraton that Lanka Sheraton has had on the country. So be sure to tune in with us tomorrow, the 23rd of February. In fact, we'll be having a breakfast grill tomorrow. Lynn, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So yes, I'm going to be speaking with Ibrahim Sufian of the Merdeka Center, as well as Professor James Chin at the University of Tasmania, all about Lanka Sheraton, kind of a look back at it as well as a look forward. So in the next 2.5 years, how are the repercussions going to take us into the next general election? So that's going to be happening tomorrow at about 8 o'clock, as per usual. But a little bit closer to home today, in about 15 minutes, we're going to be speaking with Rachel Gong, Senior Research Associate at Khazanah Research Institute, about the 56 billion ringgit plan to spur Malaysia's digital economy. So that's going to be happening at about 7:15. But right now, the markets.
Yes, in Asia, the Nikkei 225 closed down 0.7% on Friday. Kospi closed up 0.7%. SDI Singapore closed down 1%. Shanghai Composite and FBM KLCI closed up something like 0.6%.
And over in the US, the Dow was unchanged over the weekend. The S&P 500 was down 0.2%, while the NASDAQ was up 0.1%. And now for more on global markets, though, we speak with this morning to Stephen Innes, Chief Global Market Strategist at Axie. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Now, let's start off with Bitcoin. Its market value has crossed the $1 trillion mark. What type of market players are stoking the Bitcoin blaze? Speculators, or are we talking about institutional players here, Stephen?
Well, you know, as far as institutional players are concerned, a lot of them don't have the mandate to actually buy physical coins. So if they are buying coins, it would be through the futures market. They wouldn't be accepting physical at the moment. With that said, some companies have adjusted. We've seen Tesla make the move. They made a $1 billion gambit on buying coins. And I think this has attracted attention across a lot of corporate treasurers who are going to start investigating whether they should be putting Bitcoins on their balance sheet. Mind you, an asset with a volatility of 100 times is questionable whether corporate treasurers really want to have that on their asset, because we all know what goes up goes down just as quickly also. But I think the direction of travel looks to be quite clear here. It continues to move up, and I think this is due in part to the embracement that we're starting to see on broader, you know, Wall Street, for instance. That's a big factor. We start to see an ETF getting created on the Toronto Stock Exchange. So there's a lot of momentum happening here. We're hearing of colossal big Eastern money looking to open up funds. So yeah, there's quite a drive here behind the Bitcoin. And I'm not even going to call it a craze right now, because it looks like it's gone beyond the craze value, although arguably it's just an overcrowded trade right now. And that's really what's the worrying aspect of everything.
Yeah, Stephen, some of the reports I'm seeing here is that Tesla has already made like $1 billion based on the rally that Bitcoin has seen. I think that's more money than it made in car sales in 2020. When we take a look at the long Bitcoin trade, Stephen, do you think this is an oversized bubble? What are your overall thoughts about this? Do we have enough data to really tell whether this is a bubble or how far it could go?
We really don't. I'm just mad I didn't buy it at 4,000 when it was down there last March. The issue here is valuation, and trying to peg a valuation, really relying on the scarcity values more than anything else as a guidepost, because we're nearing that edge of when Bitcoins are going to be fully mined out. And that creates a scarcity value, especially when you have bigger institutions coming up and buying what limited amounts are left. Mind you, keeping in mind, most of these Bitcoins are owned by a minority, not a majority of people. And this probably worries me more than anything else. We have a leveraged future market here, that's all on futures. What if that futures demand sort of evaporates? Where do the coins go? So there's a lot of issues here, but I like the idea of an ETF coming to the market. So because ETF have to be very much governed and they'll have to buy physical Bitcoins, and that's important. So they won't be speculating on futures to a large degree. They'll be buying Bitcoin. So I think over the near term, there will be a little bit way to go here. But, you know, I'm guessing really, because I just don't have enough back-tested data. Look, we've just been looking at this, these coins for 10 years in relationship. We've been looking at gold for over 200 years. So, it's a bit different. It's like, I don't want to jump the gun saying no or yes. I think it belongs, a small portion belongs on everybody's asset at the moment because it continues to go up. But whether, you know, whether it should be 10% of one's overall portfolio, like I do recommend in gold, is a question I can't really answer. I don't feel comfortable answering because I don't know where it's going to go, quite frankly.
So, Stephen, let's also jump over to the Japanese yen. So why has it been recently strengthening against the US dollar? Is this primarily due to rising treasury yields?
Yeah, everything seems to be moving to the beat of the yields market right now. We had the U.S. yields shoot ahead of everyone quite quickly, but then we saw global yields pretty much doing the same. So there's been a little bit of a tug of war in currency markets right now where, you know, the U.S. dollar weakens, the U.S. dollar strengthens. I think ultimately where currency markets are going to go is back to the growth narratives again. Keeping in mind, I think there will be some, you know, differences when central banks tighten. We've moved off the easing narrative. Back in the global financial crisis, the RBA was the first to go, subsequently by the RBNZ. I don't think that's going to be the case this year, although if you look at the way the market's repricing the structure, they're still pricing back to that narrative where the RBA may be the first to lift off again because the economy is doing well. I have a feeling that the feds are going to be the first to lift off, and that's just simply because of the amounts of stimulus that are getting put on behind here. And we've got a policy that's really driven to add 1 million people back to 1 million jobs back to the U.S. economy per month. And that sort of, to me, compresses the timeline for Fed policy, because there's really only a year there if you think about it. But if there's people say there's more than 10 million jobs. Let's just say the U.S. is minus 10 million jobs right now. If those jobs get created between, you know, within a 1 year, well, the feds are going to tighten. So that's the way I'm looking at it right now. And that's just a fact of life that people are going to have to prepare for.
So, therefore, do you expect the yen to continue gaining strength against the greenback this quarter, or is it still hard to predict?
Well, I think the yen is going to weaken. The reason why I say that is because I think that could be one currency out of everyone here that would be more prone to higher yields. If we look historically, the dollar yen moves higher, weaker yen, stronger dollar on higher U.S. yields. We still have the Bank of Japan that wants to keep rates anchored. Now, historically, Bank of Japan are the leaders on innovative bank moves. However, they've been sort of stuck behind the curve here for years, and I don't think they're going to raise rates too much. So my view here is that dollar yen will go higher, not lower.
And Stephen, just very quickly here, let's talk about Asian equities, because we're seeing a little bit of a rotation into semiconductor stocks on the back of this global chip shortage. Which countries in the region, besides Taiwan and also Malaysia, is an immediate beneficiary of this cyclical play?
Well, you know, Singapore exports, everybody that's got some sort of connection with the semis is going to be doing quite well. Obviously, the big leaders, but we also have to look about what all the other components that go into the overall basket, because those are still in demand also. So whatever other components companies are making components for anything to do with electricity, anything to do with greening, all these, the green energy program, I should say, all of these are really in demand in every country right now. If they're not manufacturing, they're probably trying to gear up some sort of technology to start innovating and creating more around those areas right now. Of course, foreign direct investment is quite low, but the idea is to try to attract some money somehow.
Stephen, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Stephen Innes, Chief Global Market Strategist at Axie. Now, very quickly, though, I want a quick look at some results. Luxury goods manufacturer Hermès saw sales rise 16% in the fourth quarter of 2020, almost twice what analysts had expected. The leather goods unit was the main driver behind this performance, and revenue at Hermès grew 39% in Asia, although it did shrink about 10% in Europe.
But it appears that Hermès benefited nevertheless from a strong and loyal customer base in Europe. For other luxury companies, in contrast, Europe has been the worst performing region due to a lack of Chinese tourists. But for Hermès, the reduction in tourist flows was more than offset by their customer base. Now, their strong performance also comes on the heels of LVMH's sales surge last month. Luxury shoppers do seem to be turning to some established premium brands like Louis Vuitton and Dior.
Well, you know, luxury brands. On something a little bit maybe more mainstream, perhaps Bitcoin, as we know, we were discussing with Stephen just now, is up by about 98% year to date and it has hit a new high of $57,000. Like Stephen, I feel like, oh, maybe I should have put in some money.
All right, now we're going into a few messages. When we come back, we'll be speaking about Malaysia's digital economy blueprint with Rachel Gong of Khazanah Research Institute. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.